Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
People, what NSFW secret can ruin your life? I need to acknowledge up front that what I did was incredibly harmful and wrong. I stalked my friend, but it wasn't just online or through social media. I went far beyond that. I intentionally made her fear for her safety, to the point where she was afraid to leave her house and became paranoid. She even reached a point where she was considering involving the FBI because of the things I was doing to her. I went so far as to create fake accounts, use a burner phone, send anonymous letters with no return address. Basically, I invented a whole separate identity for the purpose of tormenting her. The most twisted part is that I even pretended to be on her side, helping her try to figure out who the stalker was. There was no logical reason for this. I wasn't angry or seeking revenge. I did it because I was bored, and I wanted control over the situation. No one knows what I did, and I understand that if it ever came out, it would completely destroy my life and reputation. I deeply regret my actions, and I feel sick thinking about how much damage I caused to her life. It's something I can never undo, but I am committed to acknowledging it and taking responsibility for what I did. Story 2. I've been in a strictly physical relationship with my first cousin for the last 5 years. We only ever saw each other once or twice a year growing up before she moved to the other side of the country, and then never really saw or interacted with each other again until 5 years ago when she moved back. What started as us meeting up once in a while has become a regular thing in the last few months. It's escalated to the point where we're now texting each other in inappropriate ways. I'm scared to death of what might happen if anyone in our family finds out, but I don't want to stop what's happening either. Here's the story. It all started out very slow before it escalated. I was informed by another cousin of ours and asked to help her move since I was free at the time. We started hanging out throughout that summer, and then one afternoon we had brunch, and then went back to chill at her apartment. It was a super hot day, so we thought let's just go indoors and relax and watch some TV or a movie. I can't remember what we were watching, but we were chatting the whole time too, just talking about our relatives and what we were looking to do with our lives and careers. After a while, she kind of just leaned on me and got comfortable, and I threw my arm around her, almost instinctively, and we're just hanging out like that for a bit. Eventually, she gave me a lingering look that was kind of asking, "What's happening here?" And we both went in for a kiss. We were both shocked that it happened, but we got over it fast and started making out. Then I realized what we were doing and stopped it from going any further. We both came to our senses and stopped before anything went any further. We decided to forget it happened and move past it, but every time we met up after that, we'd make out and push our boundaries until we eventually ended up sleeping together. Afterwards, we met up regularly until we both got really busy with work and only met up on occasion. We completely stopped when each of us had a significant other, but would start hooking up again every so often when we are single. As mentioned before, now it's become a regular occurrence where we hook up multiple times a week. Story 3. I ended up getting my stepsister pregnant. My mom remarried when I was 19, and my new stepdad had a daughter. She was confident and outgoing, and we found each other attracted to one another, so it didn't take long for us to start getting close. About a year later, she found out she was pregnant. She told her mom that the father was a guy from school, and her mom arranged for an abortion. Now, 14 years later, our parents are still married, and we see each other at family gatherings regularly. Only a handful of people in the family know that she was pregnant at 19, and she's still the only one who knows that I was the father. Story 4. About 2 years ago, I found myself in a situation where I essentially had an emotional affair with a woman I met during a business trip. The thing is, she now lives in our town, and it's something that's been eating away at me ever since. I've been with my wife for almost 20 years. We had a strong and happy relationship in the beginning, but over the last 7 years, things have been very different. She was diagnosed with a mental health disorder, but for reasons I'll never fully understand, she refused treatment. She became a shell of the person she once was, and it broke my heart to watch. Her behavior was unpredictable. One minute, she was screaming at me over something small, like not bleaching the kitchen floor. The next, she was angry that I wasn't more emotionally available. I tried to be patient and supportive, but honestly, I felt drained and often emotionally abused. I know she was struggling, but I was struggling too. I tried to talk to her, but it felt like it was always met with resistance. Eventually, I just took it. Then, 2 years ago, I was sent on a two-month business trip for a new position with my company. It was a great opportunity, but also a relief to be away from the constant tension at home. During that time, I met a woman at work. She was from a different department, but we interacted often. Over the course of the 6 weeks, we started spending more time together, two or three times a week. Toward the end, I started to realize things were heading into territory I shouldn't have allowed. We were joking, laughing, and having fun, but then there was one night where things crossed a line. She was much more flirtatious, and it was clear that she wanted more than just friendship. I'll admit, I was tempted. She was attractive, engaging, and for once, I didn't feel criticized or invisible. But when it got too close to something I wasn't comfortable with, I told her that I couldn't see her outside of work anymore. I wasn't proud of the way things got that close. I also knew that my wife, who was already very jealous at the time, would never have handled it well if she knew about this woman. Even though nothing physical ever happened, the fact that the other woman wanted it and I hadn't been honest with my wife was a huge betrayal. I realize now that it was a massive mistake on my part. When I came back home, I finally gave my wife an ultimatum. She needed to get treatment for her mental health, or our relationship was over. Honestly, I was at the breaking point, and the emotional distance between us had gotten too great. It wasn't just the affair that made me act, but also the realization that I shouldn't be seeking emotional fulfillment from someone else. Thankfully, my wife took my ultimatum seriously. She started treatment and has been doing incredibly well ever since. She's become more like the woman I fell in love with, and we've rebuilt our relationship. But here's the thing. Last year, this woman from my business trip moved to our town for a new job at the regional office. I've seen her around the office a few times, but we don't talk. I know my wife would be devastated if she ever found out the truth about what happened. It feels like a ticking time bomb. There's a part of me that feels like I need to tell her, but I'm terrified of how she might react and whether it would undo everything we've worked for. I know this situation isn't as extreme as some of the other stories you might hear, but it's something that's been eating away at me. I don't want to live with the guilt anymore, and I don't want the past to come back and hurt the relationship we've built. But I'm conflicted about whether telling my wife will bring us even closer or destroy everything we've worked so hard to rebuild. Story 5. I grew up in a rural community in South Idaho, where Mormonism was prevalent. During high school in the early 2000s, chatting online through MSN Messenger was a popular way for students to connect. One day, my best friend asked me to help him access his girlfriend's email account, as she had forgotten her password. We managed to guess the answer to her password recovery question and discovered something upsetting. She was being unfaithful. We logged out and kept this secret to ourselves. Soon after, I began feeling a temptation to explore other people's accounts. I accessed multiple email accounts, mostly finding nothing of interest, but one account stood out. It belonged to a kind and well-respected girl from school. Her inbox was filled with strange messages from people I didn't know, which made me uncomfortable. I realized I had crossed a line and quickly logged out, feeling guilty about my actions. However, I couldn't shake off the feeling that I wanted to keep going. So, I created a fake email account, using a similar username style as the ones in her contact list, and began chatting with her under this false identity. I convinced her to engage in inappropriate conversations, which included webcam interactions. I never showed my face, and she never showed hers, but I still felt guilty for manipulating the situation. Eventually, I took her to my senior year dance, where we shared a kiss. She stopped me, telling me that it felt wrong. I realized I was likely the only person who knew about her secret. Years later, I left the Mormon church, realizing that my actions had caused harm and acknowledging the need for change in my life. Story 6. Probably doing audio corn. What started as something I thought I'd try for just a week or two turned into a much bigger part of my life. I quickly realized how enjoyable it was, and how rewarding it felt to create things that people appreciated. Over a year later, it's become a big part of who I am. Once I figured out that I could apply my past editing and organizational skills to reach out to other performers, mostly female, but sometimes male, and bring them together to work on a single audio project, I saw endless possibilities. I realized that no one was really stepping up to organize and edit collaborations, so I took it upon myself to become that person. At this point, I've probably organized and posted over 40 or 50 large collaborations that have been really well received. But it's something I'll never be able to talk about in real life. There's no way I could ever share that with my friends or family. The only person who knows about all of this in real life, and with whom I can talk about it, is my girlfriend, and she already knows everything because I met her cause we were both doing audio corn and started chatting one day. I guess that's my other NSFW secret that I can never reveal how I actually met my girlfriend and future wife. Same goes for my best friend. Story 7. 2 years ago, for about 4 months, I worked as an escort. It wasn't something I ever expected, but I was in a tough spot financially. I hadn't had regular meals for a while, and finding steady work seemed impossible. My first weekend in this situation, I made $2,000, which was a huge help at the time. Surprisingly, I didn't mind the experience. My primary client was a kind person, and although he was much older than me, he wasn't unattractive. At that point in my life, it gave me a strange sense of empowerment.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I had just gone through a difficult breakup, one where my ex left for England without any warning or explanation, and I couldn't shake the feeling that people often took advantage of me. So, I thought, if people were going to treat me that way, I might as well take advantage of the situation too. The arrangement ended when my grandfather passed away, and I was asked to stay with my grandmother for a while to support her. It's amazing how quickly you can lose contact with people when life changes. Looking back, I don't regret what I did. I needed the money, and strangely enough, it made me feel more confident and empowered at the time. I also learned some valuable lessons along the way. However, I do wonder about how my past might impact my future. My field of study is likely to lead me into a job in a religious school, and I can't help but feel that some potential employers might be uncomfortable with that part of my history. Story 8. After 3 years married, we played Never Have I Ever with a group of friends. I found out that my husband once banged someone else's wife in the back of a bar. He also used to deliver Chinese food and was invited in to bang a customer on her kitchen counter a la cliche corn style. It was one of the last deliveries of the day, just before Christmas. He mentioned that the girl took a while to pay, and he could hear her arguing with someone on the phone while inside. When she finally paid, she shyly invited him in to share the food with her. He made a quick call to his boss at the time, who happened to be his cousin. His cousin was pretty laid back and told him to go for it, so he went in. The girl explained that she had been fighting with her boyfriend and was feeling down, especially with it being Christmas time. Drinks were had, one thing led to another, and she kicked him out at 3 a.m. in freezing New Jersey. He was a handsome, young, and charming Chinese man at the time, and he jokes, "Well, I guess I was a bit of a player." Story 9. I ended up getting a big promotion by leveraging some work that wasn't entirely my own. So here's the background. I work at a company that isn't exactly known for its smooth operations. Things tend to fall through the cracks, and it's a constant battle to catch up and fix mistakes that have been lingering. Frustrated by the inefficiency, I decided to create a business solution to address some of the issues. I didn't have a lot of time to dedicate to the project, so I figured I wouldn't try to reinvent the wheel. Instead, I searched for some existing source code that I could adapt. I didn't find much that fit my needs, but I did come across a video tutorial from a developer that seemed to have a solution close to what I wanted to achieve. I asked HR for an extra screen so I could follow along with the video, and they provided me with a monitor that had a special polarizer, making it hard to view from anything but one angle. I set up the video on that screen and started coding along, making changes as needed. My boss eventually noticed the progress I was making and praised me for being an excellent programmer. He even suggested doubling my salary due to the initiative, speed, and quality of the work I had been producing. The software was written in Ruby, a language I knew very little about. I was worried I might get caught, as my experience was in PHP and a bit of Java. But then, my boss asked if I was proficient in PHP and suggested I help out with some queries from the development team for 6 months. It all worked out perfectly. I landed a significant pay raise, a better role with more benefits, and had 6 months to learn Ruby. Plenty of time to catch up and level up my skills. Story 10. When I was in university, I had intimate relations with my housemate's father. She introduced me to him one day, and we had a nice chat together. Afterward, he drove her to university, then came back to our house. He knocked on my door and, in a very straightforward manner, asked me to get on the bed. We ended up having a pretty good time for about an hour, but when it was over, he got out of bed, took my innards, and left, which made things a bit awkward between me and my housemate. Apparently, after that, he started developing an interest in sleeping with her friends. This made things more awkward for the rest of her social circle. Story 11. I used to work in the phone industry, and for about 2 months, I worked alongside my assistant manager. I had one rule: never add anyone from work on Facebook. I preferred to keep things professional and only exchange numbers for work-related purposes. One day, his fiancée came by to drop off his gym bag. He had been on break and told me that if anyone asked for him, I should just take the bag and put it in the back. That's when a girl walked in, and to my surprise, it was my old friend Kate, someone I hadn't seen in years. She had been my fling buddy when I was 19. We were both happy to see each other and caught up on old times. Then she said, "I didn't know you worked with my fiancé. I almost forgot that's why I'm here." I was taken aback. I realized that Jason had never shown me any pictures of his fiancé, and all I knew about her was her name. We talked about the past, and she shared how things were going with Jason. They seemed happy, and she was excited about the wedding, even though it was more than a year away. Before leaving, she dropped off his gym bag, and we promised to keep in touch. Unfortunately, Jason and Kate didn't make it to the wedding. They broke up just a few months before the big day, which was pretty sad. However, it's funny to think that my assistant manager's ex-fiancée gave me my first lesbian experience, introduced me to various bedroom activities, and taught me that I'm really freaky with the right person. Story 12. A friend of mine from high school, Chase, shared something with me during our sophomore year that stuck with me. We had a close friendship, and we spent a lot of time together. We both came from tough backgrounds, and that shaped a lot of our experiences. One day, after school, I witnessed Chase selling some weed to a guy named Terrence, a senior who had a reputation for being a bully. As we walked away, Chase vented about how much he disliked the guy. Later, we pooled our money together to buy more weed, and while we were smoking, Chase told me he needed to confess something. Chase shared that Terrence had tried to hurt his sister, and when she screamed, he stopped. This incident happened at a park, and his sister was in eighth grade at the time. Chase told me that after the incident, Terrence came to him to buy weed but didn't have enough money. So, Chase offered him weed for free in exchange for stealing a few cans of Four Loko. What struck me was when Chase told me that he had laced the weed with something stronger, knowing that it would harm Terrence. He explained that he had been doing this for weeks, selling him the laced weed and charging him more than usual. It was clear that Terrence had become addicted, and Chase mentioned how Terrence had given up personal items to pay for more. Although I wasn't in a position to judge, given the world we both came from, it still felt wrong to me. I didn't say anything at the time because I wasn't sure what I could do. We eventually drifted apart, and a year later, I moved away from my hometown. I later heard that Terrence had been struggling, going in and out of rehab and jail, facing homelessness. As of now, I've learned that Chase's sister is going to prom soon. I hope she's doing well. Story 13. My entire career has been built on a foundation that isn't entirely truthful, and now, it's all coming to light. When I was 22, I found myself in a very difficult situation. I was midway through my bachelor's degree, struggling with substance dependence and some mental health challenges. That summer, I was involved in a serious car accident. In addition to multiple broken bones, I suffered a traumatic head injury that led to severe facial lacerations, requiring extensive stitches. As challenging as the physical recovery was, I also experienced significant confusion, anger, and overwhelming emotions, which I later learned were due to a traumatic brain injury. Though I wanted to appear okay, I returned to school after taking a few months to recover. However, within the first week, it became clear that I wasn't able to cope. There were too many questions about the accident, too much anxiety, and I had lost most of my coping mechanisms. Whenever I became overwhelmed, I would feel physically unwell, anxious, and would lose track of where I was or what I was doing. It was disorienting and embarrassing, especially for someone who had always been under a lot of pressure to succeed. At that point, I had lost nearly all of my friends, and I feared that those who remained would leave me if they knew how much I was struggling. So, I told everyone that everything was fine. I would leave the house every day, driving around for hours. Sometimes I'd stop in parking lots, sometimes I'd drive aimlessly for the day. I would buy used textbooks to give the impression that I was studying. I fabricated stories about my classes and professors so that I had something to share when people asked about my academic progress. I convinced myself that I was just waiting for my brain to recover, and I would return to school when I was capable. But as time passed, things only seemed to worsen, and I found myself more and more unable to get back on track. This continued for nearly 2.5 years, until I was supposed to be graduating. At that point, I had to fabricate that part of my story as well. I forged transcripts and made up excuses for why I didn't want to pursue a career in my field of study. I took a labor job, and over time, I slowly began to recover as my mental health improved and steady work helped me regain stability. Eventually, I moved away. For the first time in years, I was free from my substance dependency and beginning to feel more connected to the world, though I still carried the weight of the untruth about my degree. I volunteered in organizations related to my field, and they appreciated my work. In fact, they valued me so much that they hired me on an emergency basis, no transcripts required, and I've been with the organization ever since. Now, 3 years into my recovery and far removed from the darkest chapters of my life, they want to promote me to a higher level role, which I would truly enjoy. I'm great at what I do, and it brings me immense satisfaction, but this promotion would involve background checks and scrutiny that I know I can't honestly meet. When I was struggling with depression, I honestly didn't think I'd make it this far. So while I understood that my past decisions could lead to this situation, I never anticipated it. Worse than losing my job would be having those around me learn the truth. Now, I find myself in a position where I may have to step away from what I love because of the very kindness they've shown me. I do plan to return to school and pursue my degree for real this time, and I believe I'll succeed. But the shame and regret surrounding this chapter of my life is something I'm not sure I'll ever fully overcome. Story 14. I had a child using sperm from a donor I found through a classified ad. If my very religious family knew that it wasn't an accident, I would likely be shunned and disowned. I'm a woman who has faced some challenges with my appearance due to a facial condition I was born with. This isn't the main part of my story, but it's something I've struggled with. I've never had a long-term partner and have only been in a few short-term relationships. As I got older, my desire for a child became more urgent and I felt time was running out. Given my situation, I knew it was unlikely I would meet someone in time. As a middle-aged woman, I also felt my chances of finding a partner who would want to have children were slim. I'm fortunate enough to own my home and have a stable career, but I didn't want to spend all my savings on fertility treatments, which are very expensive and didn't seem like a realistic option for me. Adoption was also not an ideal route, as it's both expensive and competitive, and I felt it wasn't a realistic choice for me either. So, I turned to an unconventional option. I found a sperm donor through a classified ad, and he generously offered his donation without compensation. Now, my child is a preschooler, and I'm filled with joy and fulfillment. Every day feels like a gift, and I am so grateful for the opportunity to be a mother. I cherish every moment and try to be the best parent I can be, making sure to lead with love and care. Parenting has truly helped me grow as a person and has made me reflect on how I show up in the world. I keep in touch with the donor, sending regular updates and pictures, as he has been incredibly kind and supportive, trusting me with such an important decision. Story 15. I did something I deeply regret, and it's the first time I've ever shared it with anyone. The situation is complicated, and while I can't excuse my actions, I struggle with justifying them in my own mind. If my wife ever found out, I would probably lose everything, including her, and I could never face my in-laws again. Here's what happened. My father-in-law has been a source of constant turmoil for our family for as long as I've known him. He struggled with alcoholism, which led to daily drunkenness, verbal abuse, and even occasional physical violence toward my mother-in-law. My wife lived with him for many years, and when we started dating and eventually got married, I was relieved to get her out of that toxic environment. But even though we moved to a new house in a different neighborhood, we couldn't escape him. We were still close enough that he would show up at our door unannounced, usually in the middle of the night, drunk and needing a place to crash. One such night, he came over and insisted on staying, and out of sympathy and my wife's sense of duty, we let him in. What followed were hours of him ranting and raving until he passed out. This became a regular pattern for the next several years. Even after we had a baby, these late-night visits continued, disrupting our sleep and peace. There were times when I refused to let him in, only to face my wife's disappointment and frustration. She saw him as a victim of his addiction and felt I should be more understanding. For me, it felt like I was constantly trying to manage his behavior without any support from the rest of the family. The only relief came when he would get arrested, sometimes for domestic violence or other alcohol-related incidents. At times, I became angry and resentful, particularly toward my in-laws. I felt they were enabling his behavior by simply locking him out of their house each night, knowing he would eventually come to us. I was also frustrated with my mother-in-law for not calling the police more often to address his abuse. But, above all, I was angry with the justice system for repeatedly letting him out of jail, despite his long history of violence and criminal behavior. This is where the money comes into play. My in-laws didn't drive, so I was always the one who had to take my father-in-law to court, meet with lawyers, post bond, or pick him up from jail. It was a significant burden on me, especially since I had to take time off work to manage his legal issues. Then, one day, he was charged with a serious crime. He had assaulted someone so badly that the victim was nearly killed, and my father-in-law was charged with attempted murder. The bond was set at $10,000. The family, as usual, scrambled to gather the money from whatever sources they could, including extended family. They were used to posting bond and losing it because of his repeated arrests, so they didn't think much of it. Eventually, my father-in-law was convicted and sentenced to a long prison term. I felt a huge sense of relief, knowing we wouldn't have to deal with his erratic behavior for a long time. However, there was a court technicality, and the bond money was refunded. Since I was the one who had posted it, the check came in my name for $10,000 plus interest. My in-laws, who didn't fully understand the legal and financial aspects, didn't realize this. In that moment, I made a decision. I felt justified, given all the time and energy I had spent dealing with the consequences of his actions. But I knew deep down that it wasn't right. I took the money, thinking I would eventually make it right, but that day has yet to come. I know I can't undo what I did, and it weighs heavily on me. If I ever get the chance, I hope to find a way to make amends, but for now, I live with the consequences of my actions. Story 16. I have a secret that I've been hiding, and it's one that feels like it could have a significant impact on my life if it were to come out. The secret is that I sometimes choose not to wear my hijab. On social media, in front of my family, and in most of my social circles, I wear it. But when I graduated 2 years ago and began job hunting, I struggled to find anything. After facing rejection, I came up with an idea. I decided to try interviewing for jobs without it, thinking it might improve my chances. Once I had a job offer, I planned to start wearing it again. Surprisingly, I ended up receiving 2 job offers, which made me realize that my hypothesis was correct. Removing the hijab seemed to make things easier. I chose one of the offers, and since then, I haven't worn the hijab to work. Somewhere along the way, I began to enjoy the attention I was receiving, especially from men. For the first time, I felt like I belonged or was treated more normally by my peers. People started engaging with me more, I no longer got odd stares, and I wasn't asked questions that made me feel uncomfortable. I'm scared to tell my parents because I don't want to disappoint them. I'm even more afraid of how the Muslim community might react if they knew. There is a lot of judgment and bullying for women who take it off, and I've heard harsh things said about those who make that choice. So, when I'm with my family or in places where I know I might run into someone I know, I wear it, but otherwise I don't. In a way, I'm leading a double life. I know people may have strong opinions about this, but for now, I'm okay with how I'm living. I still go back and forth about what I truly want in the long run. Story 17. I think this is something many people can relate to. I don't really care about my company or its larger goals beyond the professional expectations of my job. I do my work well because I'm paid to do it, but I'm not putting in extra effort beyond that. I don't buy into the idea that my work defines me, and the only reason I care about the company sticking around is so I don't lose my job. If my company ever found out how I really feel, it could have serious consequences. A lot of companies, especially in tech, push the idea that work should be your life, and if you're not all in, you're seen as unmotivated or not dedicated. It's common, though, for people to feel the same way I do, but if you express it out loud, you could risk your career. I'm not saying I don't work hard, I do. I'm just not willing to work extra hours without compensation. I'm paid for 40 hours a week, and that's what I give. If they want me to work 60 hours a week, then they can pay me for it. But I'm not doing it for free, and I don't have any emotional investment in the company's mission. Edit. When I say this is a secret, I mean that if my coworkers and I were to share these feelings with management, we'd likely be reprimanded, possibly even fired. It's a mindset that can get you in trouble in the corporate world, especially when companies expect you to be motivated by more than just your paycheck. I think this is a pretty common feeling, though. It's just something most people keep to themselves because of the risk of negative consequences. Also, I'm not against working more than 40 hours in certain situations, but I expect to be paid for it. If a product is launching and we need to work extra hours to meet the deadline, I'm fine with that for a short period, as long as it's reflected in the compensation. The issue comes when working those long hours becomes the expectation year-round with no increase in pay. Similarly, I understand people working long hours at startups with the potential for big returns, but I'm not going to work 80-hour weeks for a company that's paying me a salary without offering any substantial financial rewards. Story 18. I was picked on a lot when I was younger, especially in primary school. One kid, let's call him John, was particularly harsh. He would often get frustrated and lash out with skipping ropes, using them to whip me and chasing after me if I tried to run away. He also said some really hurtful things to me. By the time I was 10, the bullying had escalated, and more kids started joining in. I felt trapped because if I told the school, they would give the bullies a warning, but the behavior would continue anyway. I decided to take matters into my own hands. One day, as John and his friends were coming towards me, ready to start picking on me again, I stood there holding a plastic tennis racket, filled with frustration. In one swift motion, I spun around, not expecting to hit anything. I'd always struggled with coordination as a kid, but somehow, the racket hit him right on the side of his face, causing him to bleed pretty badly. He had to go home that day. At the time, I didn't fully realize the extent of what I'd done, but later on I found out he had suffered some minor, temporary brain damage. I truly thought I had seriously hurt him, and I still regret that moment deeply. John's friends were too scared to report what happened, fearing I would react aggressively. Until that moment, I had been a quiet, reserved kid, and my sudden outburst caught everyone off guard. Afterward, most of them stopped talking to me altogether. Some people might suggest I try to reach out and make amends with John, but honestly, I don't think I could ever fully forgive him for what he put me through for 2 years. Edit. Just to clarify, when I mentioned brain damage, I meant it was minor and not permanent. His injuries were temporary. The damage was not long-lasting. He recovered fully after a while. Some people seem confused about how I could lash out like that. I think if you've built up a lot of anger over time, it can eventually explode into one big reaction. As for how this could affect me, the guilt has stayed with me throughout my teenage years and even now. I know other people have faced worse situations, but for me, the weight of what happened has been tough to carry. Story 19. I've come to realize that I'm not attracted to my wife when she's high. She smokes weed, and I'm okay with it in general, but when she's under the influence, she's not the person I fell in love with. She becomes less sharp, forgetful, indecisive, and just seems disconnected from everything. It's almost like I'm with a different person entirely, and it's hard for me to feel that same connection. I don't mind that she enjoys the way it makes her feel, but she seems to want that state more and more. Sometimes, I wish she would choose to be present with me and the family, without needing to be stoned to do so. She struggles with anxiety and a few other things that make our life together challenging at times. But those are the kinds of issues I want to work through with her, together. But when she turns to weed to cope instead of facing things head-on, it feels like I can't really help or be there for her in the way I want to. Story 20. During my junior year of high school, I enrolled in an AP sculpture class. As you might expect, most of the seniors in the class treated it like a blow-off class, and no one took it seriously. Because of that, I was one of the only juniors, and I quickly became a target for their cruelty. At first, it started with some name-calling and light teasing, but it quickly became more personal. It never got physical, but they would deliberately bump into me while I was working on the wheel, ruining whatever I was trying to make. Then it escalated further. One of them punctured a piece of clay I had bought for $25, which was a lot of money for me at 16, leaving it dry and unusable. After enduring this for an entire semester, I decided I had had enough and would fight back in my own way. Since it was an art class, there was a fair amount of independent work. The teacher generally left us to do our own thing, as long as we met the requirement of 6 projects per quarter. We'd submit our projects with a handwritten proposal, and then the clay would be fired in the kiln. I watched my tormentors casually turn in their projects, only to secretly destroy them when they thought no one was looking. By the second semester, I had quietly sabotaged about 80% of their projects. With 2 weeks left in the school year, the teacher held one-on-one conferences with a small group of seniors. As a result, those students failed the class, were unable to graduate, and had to attend an alternative school. They lost sports scholarships and offers from prestigious universities. To be honest, I felt no sympathy for them. They had made my life miserable, and I didn't regret what I did. Tommy, Dave, Mick, Trent, Harry, Steve, Aaron. If you ever come across this, I want you to know that I don't care about what happened to you, and I hope life has made you reflect on your actions. Story 21. When I was 23, a friend and I went out to a bar with his much older uncle. There was a woman there who was flirting with the uncle, probably in her late 20s or early 30s. She wasn't really my type, and honestly, she seemed to be a little off-putting to most people. Around 2 a.m., when the bar was closing, we made a poor decision to drive back to my friend's house, and she came along, still flirting with the uncle all the way there. We kept drinking, and eventually, someone brought out marijuana and then some. By 4 a.m., my friend's uncle was trying to convince her to go to his room, but she was saying she just wanted to go home, and she began crying. I, feeling a mix of guilt and confusion, told her I could drive her home. Despite the uncle's protests, she got in my truck, and we drove off, but only for about 3 blocks. I soon realized I was in no condition to be behind the wheel, so I pulled over, told her I couldn't safely drive, and suggested I walk her home instead. She lived about 7 miles away, but I figured we could save some time by walking along the railroad tracks diagonally across town. As we walked, I started to flirt a bit, and her behavior shifted in a way that felt increasingly uncomfortable. She started speaking in a high-pitched, childish tone, and it made me feel uneasy, but I continued along with it. At some point, she made an inappropriate comment. Looking back, I can see how messed up the entire situation was. I was under the influence, and I made a decision that I deeply regret. The whole experience was bizarre, and in hindsight, it was one of the worst choices I've ever made. Afterward, she acted strangely again, excusing herself to go to the bathroom in a public place. I was struck by how surreal the whole situation had become, and the weight of my bad decisions finally hit me. I realized I'd made a huge mistake, both in the choices I made that night and in how I'd handled everything leading up to it. In a moment of panic and confusion, I just decided to leave. I took off running, the absurdity of it all sinking in as I heard her calling out in the distance. When I got back to my truck, I felt sick to my stomach. I drove home, ashamed and disgusted by what had happened. I knew I needed to take responsibility for my actions, and I promised myself I would reflect on this experience and try to learn from it. That morning, I got into bed with my fiancé, feeling an overwhelming mix of guilt and relief. I knew I needed to change, and I couldn't ignore how wrong everything had been. Story 22. When I was in junior high, I missed a lot of school because I was struggling with depression and didn't want to be around people. My mom allowed me to stay home when I felt like it, and I still managed to get all A's. I just needed the space to cope. Eventually, I got a letter saying I had missed too many days and would have to repeat a grade. So, my mom forged doctor's notes to cover the absences. Technically, I shouldn't have passed ninth grade, but my mom was furious and insisted I deserved my grades and shouldn't be penalized for missing a few extra days of school. Now, I work for the same school district, and the principal who handled that situation is now our superintendent. I don't think anything would come of it if people knew, but I imagine my mom might get into a bit of trouble if it came to light. Story 23. 5 years ago, I found myself in a dark place, living in a small apartment and watching motivational videos on YouTube. I felt disconnected from life, from myself, and from the people around me. My job made me miserable, and I was overwhelmed with negative emotions, thinking that escape might be the only way out. I had a trip planned and decided that I would off myself while I was far away, in a place where no one knew me. I ended up at a beautiful campground in the Florida Panhandle. There, I met a couple of guys who had been cave diving. Later that night, we had a conversation about the lake, which was connected by an underwater cave system. The guys offered me their backup diving equipment and suggested that we explore the caves together. One of them decided to stay behind, so I went with the other guy to talk about life. We agreed on the dive. I told him that I wanted to go free diving, but that I didn't want any help beyond guidance through the cave. If something were to go wrong, I asked him to let me go. We made a pact and went to bed. The next day, we got ready for the dive. I sent a couple of messages to remind people I cared about them. As we descended and lost sight of the sunlight, I detached my regulator and began swimming through the cave, pushing myself further despite the physical pain. I focused on staying calm, exhaling steadily, and not touching the walls, floor, or ceiling. As I swam deeper, exhaustion set in, and I began to reflect on my life. I grew up with certain beliefs, and in that moment, I found myself saying prayers, accepting that I might not make it out. I realized how much unnecessary weight I had carried, negative thoughts, frustrations, and regrets that had clouded my perception of the world. In that quiet darkness, I understood how beautiful and precious life is, and how much we need to take care of each other and the world around us. I also knew I was at the brink of something serious. I kept swimming until I saw the light from the lake, knowing I had made it. It was a powerful feeling of overcoming the heaviness I had been carrying, facing my struggles, and still pushing forward. Since then, I've made it a point to take regular vacations, venturing far from home to focus on personal growth and reflection. Before I leave, I make sure to take care of the practical details, leaving important information for the people I care about, just in case I need a reminder of what really matters. Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up, subscribe, and hit the bell icon so you never miss an update.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.